Morning. So last time we went through how our simple cache design we started with, direct map caches, worked. We mentioned that, well, since we had decided to divide up our memory and cache into these fixed size blocks, and we decided where those blocks started based on how the addresses were laid out, that, well, you know, when we brought something into the cache, always would be the whole block, even though we were bringing things in based on values being read, even if they were in the middle of the block. And we said because of locality, whenever we read something, we always brought it into our cache. And we saw, okay, how that worked with calculating how our addresses were split up into tag, next, and offset. And we saw when looking through what might happen that we could have scenarios where we just have some bad luck. And we have two values in our memory which happen to have addresses that have some bits in common, it happened to map to the same set, it happened to be accessed a lot. And this would be very inconvenient because they'd end up replacing each other. We can't keep both of them in the cache if they happen to map to the same set. And wouldn't it be nice if we had a little more choice about where we put values so we could somehow accommodate these sort of accidents? And we saw this set associative cache design which allowed for this. And one way we could think of a set associative cache is that basically we like staple some number of direct map caches together and use them in tandem. Or alternately, we can say, rather than having one place to put a value, we'll have E for some number E we choose for each possible index. And we can choose this value of E, so when we choose E equals 1, we get a direct map cache. We can choose the pot extreme of having E be the number of blocks, in which case we get a fully associative cache. We have one big row, any value can go anywhere. We have no index bits because everything goes to that one big row. But this means that we have to check every single tag in our cache on an access rather than only, you know, a small subset. And our E-way set associative cache for E's that are kind of in between gives us sort of a midpoint. We get, you know, a lot of the advantages of the lookup being simpler and faster of our direct map cache, but without getting the full complexity of the lookup on our fully associative cache, but we get also the advantages of the fully associative cache in that, well, we don't just have one option where to put things. We have more than one, we don't have all of them. We have more options on where to put things, so hopefully we won't have lots of misses from two things happening to have the same index. Questions about our what we talked about last time? Comments, follow-ups? Okay, so one thing that we left off is last time is that, you know, we had a case where we had our cache and we wanted to insert a value into our set associative cache. Because, well, we read from address 64, 64 is supposed to go in index 0, and we have to put it somewhere. And we have two options for where to put it, and it's not clear what the decision should be. So, does anyone see something which suggests we should do one over the other? Any arguments that we should put it in way 0 or way 1? Any? Or are they the same? So any arguments that there's some reason we should prefer one of the two places we could put this block? Yeah. So you want to put it in the one that's put in the earliest? So this one, because we inserted it earliest. Okay, so that's a reasonable idea. Okay. Any other ideas for how we should choose what to prefer? Yeah.
So I'm putting that in the second place, so where the 60, 61 is, because they share the part of the tag are the same. For 64, they have 0, 1, 1, 0, 0.
Okay, so you're saying, oh, we just accessed 64, that seems most spatially local to 60 and 61, So you want to keep 6-0 and 6-1? Or, okay, so you want to keep 6-0 and 6-1, okay? How about any other ideas? Yeah?
I feel like we just used like 0-0-0, so we should keep that one and just use it to replace the 6-0-6-1.
Okay, so your observation is, oh, we just accessed 0-0, which is part of 0-0 and 0-1, so locality tells us we probably don't want to replace it soon. And that last policy, that is probably our best policy for locality. It's not our best policy for bookkeeping, but it's our best policy for locality. The policy of choosing what was inserted earliest, that's easier on the bookkeeping, and also is something that real processors do. We'll first look at implementing the best policy for locality, which with just two ways is pretty practical. With more than two ways, it gets ugly. So to do the locality policy, we can track what we'll call the least recently used. So this is the least recently used way. So least recently used way. And we'll say that this is way 0, and this is way 1. And so in this case, we'll have recorded, based on the prior accesses, that we accessed 6-0 and 6-1 least recently. So that's where we want to replace. And so to do that replacement, we're going to change this here to be 6-4 and 6-5. And we're going to update the least recently used information to say now way 0 is least recently used because we just used 6-4. And we're actually going to have to update information on every access. So not just right when we have a cache miss, we also have to update it on a cache hit. So this is where I said the bookkeeping is a lot worse than just keeping track of what we inserted last. Because every time we do a read, we have to update it. So in order, for example, for us to have ended up with this 1 here, we had to have put that in, we had to update that information when we accessed address 0, even though it was a hit. To figure out, oh, I'm using way 0 here, therefore way 1's the least recently used. So questions about what our least recently used information means. I guess another thing I should point out, because I know it's a point of confusion, is note that we have one of these for each row. So for each row, each set, we're going to have to track this separately. So questions on our least recently used information. Okay, so I mentioned that with just two ways, this is fairly simple. Things get a bit more complicated with three ways. So let's say I have a cache with three ways. Why can't I, we have way 0, 1, and 2. Why? So what I'd like to, what you might think I would do is I would just track which way is least recently used. So let's say 1 is least recently used. So why? That doesn't work. So what's wrong with that approach? Why doesn't that work? Okay, so you're saying the question is about what about the other two blocks? They seem tied. So our issue is I'm telling you block 1 is least recently used, but the other two blocks I'm not telling you anything about. And you might say, well, but we just need to replace a block. So we have all the information we need to replace a block, and that's true. But the problem is, let's say I need to replace a block. So I'm going to put something new in block 1. Now I need to update the least recently used information. And I don't know how to do that. Because I didn't keep track of whether 0 or 2 was the next least recently used. So to implement the least recently used policy with more than two ways, we're going to need to actually track the order of the blocks. So what I would do instead is I would track like one, then two, for example, and now on my access, I'm going to update that to two, then zero, because now one is the most recently used. So I'm going to have to track an order, not just the least, not just the single least recently used block. I have to track the second most recently used, second least recently used, in order to have, you know, a way of keeping this information up to date if I need to do multiple replacements in succession, which will happen at some point. So to actually implement this policy for more than two ways, I actually need to track an ordering. That's actually pretty annoying to do in hardware. Also, even with just two ways, I need to potentially update this least recently used information every time we're reading from the cache. So now all my cache reads have become updates too. So for that reason, this least recently used policy for two-way cache, it is really implemented. But there are alternatives processors will use. So there's a whole bunch of replacement policies that are used in practice. So one is least recently used. So we mentioned just taking advantage of temporal locality. But to do this, from a sort of discrete math point of view, we need log 2 of e factorial bits of information. That's to track the order of the set of the ways. And the logic for updating that efficiently might not be so nice. What will commonly happen is processors will say, well, you know, I have like an 8-way cache. Keeping track of the order of the 8 ways is really annoying. And, well, we're doing this because of locality. And I told you locality is kind of like a typical property of programs, but it's not guaranteed, right? So locality is kind of an approximation anyways. So we don't actually really care about having least recently used. That's not what really matters. We just need to get close. Because, well, the real program access pattern isn't actually following that precisely anyways. Like, so the best replacement policy is probably something slightly different than least recently used because our programs don't, you know, have perfect locality. So commonly processors will implement some approximation of least recently used where the bookkeeping is made simpler by just keeping track of less information and being less precise. And sort of the main goal you might think of is rather than choosing the least recently used thing, we want to avoid choosing anything that is recently used, right? And these approximations typically end up using one or two bits per way, per row. So an idea you might have is if we could have a bit which says, is this block recently used or not? We might try to have that one bit per way in our row, and you know, we try to replace something which has that bit set to zero if we can. So these approximations are commonly will be used in practice when we have a cache with more than a trivial number of ways. But some processors say, well, gosh, you know, even when I'm doing that approximation, I need to do lots of updates on reads. And it's still a lot of work. So they want to implement something simpler. So we have a simpler policy. One which was suggested earlier is first in, first out. So rather than trying to track when things are read, we'll just keep a counter for each row, each set, of what the last thing we placed put in, and that's where we'll replace next. So this is called first in, first out. So if we think of having like a four-way cache, first I'm going to replace any the way zero, then way one, way two, way three, way zero, one, two, three in each row. So I'll just have a counter for each row saying, what's the last place I replaced? Go on to the next one. And in this case, I'm not updating information on reads, so that could be a lot more efficient. At the cost, of course, that I'm not taking advantage of locality anymore. So probably, you know, I'm not going to have as high a hit rate with this replacement policy. There's going to be more cases where I replace something that the program is in fact using a lot, and I could have told that, known that if I was tracking this information, but I'm not. And some processors have said, gosh, keeping track of that extra counter for each row, that's a lot. Why would we bother? Let's just choose a random set, random way, in a sense. And this is a real policy that real processors have implemented. And it works better than you might think. You might say, gosh, we're choosing randomly. Like, why is that? Isn't that going to be pretty bad? And, you know, because aren't we going to just replace something that we just put into the cache that's still being used? And the answer is sometimes yes. But that's kind of a self-correcting problem, because what's going to happen is soon we're going to access it, and we're going to fix our mistake, and with good probability, we're going to fix it in a way where we don't replace something that is also being used all the time. So the random policy doesn't do as badly as you might think in practice, so some processors just do that rather than tracking any extra information. So questions about are these sort of possible replacement policies? Okay, so let's do a little exercise. So let's say I have a fully associative cache, so a one set cache with 5 ways and 4 write blocks, and I have this sort of infinite access pattern here. So what I'm doing here is I'm accessing address 0 and 4, which are going to be 2 separate blocks because we have 4 write blocks, and we're accessing them every other time, and in between I'm accessing 1000, 1004, 1008, 1001c, 1010, and so on. So I'm accessing just different addresses, which I never repeat. So we know that all the accesses to these 1000x things will always be misses because we only access them once. But our hope is that our replacement policy will keep in 0, 4, so after we access them the first time, they should be hits. My question is, what actually happens for LRU, FIFO, and random? And I don't need, especially for random, I don't need an exact answer. I'm looking for sort of a rough approximation. And I'm not going to ask for an exact answer for random because this is not a probability class. And in practice, we just simulate it probably rather than doing the sort of probability exercise to compute the actual expected value. who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start with LRU. Can someone tell me, like, roughly what happens with when we run this ACLS pattern with a least recently used replacement policy? So you're saying 0 and 4 access often, so it's going to keep them in there. Yeah. So a way we can look at this is I can say if I look at an access to 0 here and I look back, it's been accessed 1, 2, 3, 4 accesses back. We have 5 things in our set. So there's never a chance for it to get out of it, out of that set, without becoming the most recently used thing. It never gets to the 5th least recently used thing. So it never gets evicted. The same is true of 4. So the least recently used, you can like kind of do out what the accesses are. So you can like do this systematically. So here I wrote out the contents of our cache, which is our one set, from most recently used to least recently used. So in practice, the cache wouldn't keep track of it like by reordering the values, but it would have like the values and then an ordering on the side. But we can see that what happens is that, you know, because we keep accessing 0, it keeps going to the front of this, and it's never going to drop off the end and get replaced. You always replace the least recently used thing. It never becomes least recently used. And so the accesses to 0 and 4 are always going to be hit after the first access, so after what I'll call the warm-up. Accesses to everything else are always misses because they're only accessed once. So there's no chance for any hits there. Some questions, how to figure this out for our LRU policy? And I guess to make it clearer, I can annotate. We have our first two accesses are the, it's not in the cache yet for 0 and 4, so they're misses. Then it's always hits, alternating with the misses for the things we only access once. Okay, so how about FIFO? First in, first out. Can someone tell me what happens there? Always going to be a miss for what? Every access?
Yeah.
Every access is going to be a miss. And how did you get that?
All the ones out replace the zeros and fours.
Okay. So your observation is, the 1,000 replaces the zeros and fours. The issue is we have a 5-way cache, so we have 5 slots. So I agree that we're going to end up replacing the zeros and fours, because they're going to, at some point, going to be the last in thing. Or the first in thing, sorry. The first in thing and not the last in thing. The problem is that if I look at, say, this access here, that's going to, I can tell that has to be a hit. And the reason it has to be a hit is that we wouldn't have needed to replace anything yet. So we have at least one hit. But I agree there are definitely some misses for 0 and 4. The question is how many? So we might need to do a little more careful analysis to figure out exactly how many, because it does turn out that we sometimes access things soon enough that they aren't replaced yet. Even though, yes, we know 0 and 4 are going to be replaced because there's so many other accesses. Someone tell me how. No volunteers. Okay, so the way I figured this out is I sort of did the brute force approach, and I kept track of the same kind of information, so the contents of it sorted from last in to first in. So as I mentioned, the cache won't actually like reorder the values, but that's convenient for me figuring out what's going on. And we can see what happens is we have our initial accesses to bring in 0 and 4. And because we're keeping track of the order when things were put into the cache, as other values get accessed, they move to the end of this list eventually, so the next access to 0 and 4 are hits, but even though we access 0 the second time, it's still the first in thing. So we haven't replaced it yet, but it's the next thing, but it's going to be the first thing replaced when we do need to replace something. And that's going to happen a little bit later here when we access 100C. Then we're going to run out of slots. We have used all our 5 ways. We need to replace something. The last in thing is going to be 0. That's what gets replaced. And that means that our next access to address 0 is a miss. And similarly, after we bring in 0, the next thing that gets replaced is going to be 4, because 4 was third to be put in. We've replaced 2 things so far, so now 4 gets replaced, 4 through 7. And that means when we access 10.10, or not 10.10, did I do this wrong? Yeah, 4 is a miss. Oh, I did this. I can't. Yes, I did this wrong. Amazing work. Okay. So this should have been here, 3, 0. And that should have been there. We have 0 through 4, 7, and that's a miss. And so we end up with a miss there. And we'd simulate this going on, and I see that when I made this slide, I wasn't paying careful attention to doing the bookkeeping correctly. Which means I need to update this slide. Which means probably the conclusion I came to is wrong. It's probably wrong. But you'll find that you have a periodic pattern here where we just, the value goes to the end after a certain number of steps periodically, and we get a hit rate of something like 2/3 for the 0 to 4. Or maybe 1. Yes. So 4, 7, yeah. So I'll need to redo this. That's not, but we'll find, so that, but that's how I would simulate it. So you just have to look through, simulate the access pattern, sort of what the ordering is that way. And I guess for time reasons, I will work on posting a corrected version of this after, sometime this afternoon. So questions on sort of the process for figuring out what happens with FIFO? So how about random? How can we sort of estimate what's going to happen with the random policy? Yeah.
So randomly, just, I mean, random is random. So you kind of, 0 to 0.3 and 0.4 to 0.7, they both have about 20% chance of getting replaced in the slot. So, and so there, that means there's 60% chance they're not getting replaced.
Okay. So your observation is they have a 20% chance of being replaced every time we replace something. You also said that means a 60% chance. That's not quite right, but that's this is not probability. But if you take probability, hopefully you'll have you calculate that correctly. So every time we have a replacement, they have about a 20% chance of being replaced. And let's look at where we have replacements. Well, between the two any two accesses to 0, so here are two accesses to 0, we have 3 accesses, of which 2 definitely will be replacements, and 1 might. So 2 will be replacements because they're accessing things which have never been accessed before. So those are definitely replacements. So the chances of, you know, so chance of hit if 2 replacements is 80% to not be replaced by the first one, and 80% times 80% to not be replaced by the second one. And if there's three replacements, it's 80% three times. And usually there should be two, so that gives us about a 64% hit rate as sort of our best case. That kind of gives us the range of possible, because we know sometimes four will be, or accessing the four in between will be a replacement, sometimes it won't. Questions on sort of that rough estimate? So what we get, so we got this estimate of sort of like at most 64%, 80 times 80 for random, for LRU, for the 0, 4 values. For LRU, we get 100% hit rate for 0, 4 after warm up. And for first in, first out, we get, you know, some fixed amount based on how long it takes the five values to go out. And we can kind of look at that and say, oh, you know, I put in 0, now I've put in 1, 2, 3, 4 values, 5 values. So kind of I expect roughly every other access to be a hit based on how long it takes values to get out of, go from first in to, from last in to first in. So roughly every other. Questions on how I figured that out? Okay. So that's talking about replacement policy. So you can see sort of our general pattern is sort of, we can simulate what happens with LRU and FIFO. It's a bunch of work, but tells us what will happen. And estimate with random. And we can see that sort of not surprisingly that basically we had sort of our best performance here with the policy that took most advantage of locality, because we had this really good locality which has told us what to cache. And the policies which didn't take advantage of locality performed a bunch worse. Okay, so we talked about replacement. But so far, we've just talked about reading values. But in practice, we also write values. We need to talk about how that works, because there's multiple good choices. So one thing we have to worry about is, let's say we're writing a value. So let's say here, I'm updating address ABCD from FF to 10. And one question is, when I do this write from my CPU, you know, what exactly should happen with the memory? So one thing which definitely needs to happen is we definitely should update the cache value, because if I write 10 to ABCD and then I read it back, I better get 10. And if the cache has a different value, well, we're going to give out that different value. So we better update the cache value. So we're definitely going to do that. But the question is, what do we do with the value in main memory? And there's two policies that are both used, depending on the cache we're talking about. So one policy is called write-through, where we'll update the cache and we'll immediately also update the next level or main memory. So this is called write-through. We always send the write to the next level right away. So the advantage of this is that we don't need to do anything about it later. Disadvantage is, well, we said that the bigger levels were slower. So we're making all our writes use the slow stuff. That might seem not so great. So another option is called write back. So in write back, we'll just update our cache. And we won't update memory yet. But we'll record that we've only updated our cache by saying that this block is dirty. So dirty is going to mean it's different than the next level potentially. That it has changes that we haven't sent to the next level. And sometime later, we're going to need to replace this value in the cache. So for example, maybe the program is going to read from another address that goes to the same set. A replacement policy decides that, oh, ABCD is the thing that needs to be replaced. And so part of replacing that value, because it's marked as dirty, is as having an update that hasn't been sent to the next level yet, is going to be to make that update happen. Because if we don't do it now, we're going to forget about it. And it would be really bad if you wrote 10 to a memory location and the processor just decided, we're going to forget about that. Don't want that to happen. So we have to remember the update. We have to send it to the next level before we get rid of it from the cache. So as part of our replacement, we're going to send that value to memory in addition to reading the new value to store to replace it. Questions? So with this other policy, which is called write back, we're going to write back the value at the last possible moment. And the hope is that, well, hopefully we've gotten a lot of advantage by keeping the writes from going to the next level in the meanwhile. Questions? Okay. And so implementing the write back policy, it means that we're going to need to track extra information for every block to indicate whether the block has a value that needs to be updated. And we only track one extra bit, so we're always going to update the whole block, not just the part which was modified. So this is write through versus write back. So two different options about what we do when we have a value in our cache. Like, do we also update memory? So there's a separate decision that we need to make about writes, which is what do we do if the processor writes to something and we don't have it cached yet? And there's two different options caches make on this. So one option would be to cache it immediately, and one option would not be. You might say, why wouldn't I just cache the value? The processor is writing that value. Why can't I just put that in my cache? And the problem is, our cache needs to have the whole block. And most of the time, the processor won't be writing a whole block. So like in this example, the processor might be writing only address, 64, and we'd have to put in 64 and 65. And in a sort of more realistic cache sizes, like we might have like a 64-byte cache block, but you're writing 4 bytes. So in order to cache those 4 bytes that you're writing, we need to read 60 bytes to fill in the rest of the cache block, which maybe doesn't seem so great. So there are two options for what you might do. So one's called write allocate. That's going to say, when you write those 4 bytes, yeah, we're going to read 60 bytes to fill in the rest of the cache block, and we're going to cache it. And the hope here is that because you wrote those 4 bytes, you're going to use the rest of that cache block, so it's worth caching, even though we're spending a cost. For write no allocate, we're just going to say, well, I don't have it cached. I don't want to go through the effort of reading in the rest of the cache block. I'm just going to send it to the next level. And if you think, for example, that you're not going to read that value soon, this might be a better choice, right? If it's likely you're not reading it anyways, why would we bother caching it? Let's just send all those writes to the next level, have it deal with it, rather than trying to read stuff in that won't be used. And real caches will implement both of these policies. Now, the choice of write allocate versus write no allocate is independent of the choice of write through versus write back. However, if we have a write back policy, kind of our assumption is that we want to keep writes local to the cache. And so it probably makes sense to cache them because we hopefully, if there's like multiple writes in the same cache block, we want to take advantage of that by having only one write go to the next level. So typically write back and write allocate are used together, but this isn't required. Similarly, if we have a write-through policy where we say if we're writing, we have to go to the next level anyways, You might have a write no allocate policy. We most commonly have a write no allocate policy with that because, you know, there's not really much advantage to caching things that you're only writing anyways. So that those are the most common combinations. But as I said, they're independent. So we don't have to do that. But most commonly, write back is kind of friends with write allocate, and write through is kind of friends with write no allocates, even though you can combine them in any way. Okay, so questions on write allocate versus write no allocates? Okay, so let's talk about how things would work. We have write allocate plus write back. So here I have a write back LRU two-way cache, and I'm writing FF into address 04. So 04 has index 0, if I divide it up into tag index offset, also has offset 0. And tag 1, if I look in index 0, it's not there, because this tag doesn't match tag 1. This tag also is not 1. So we need to decide what to replace. I have a least recently used replacement policy. The least recently used way is way 1. And we're numbering the ways. This is way 0. This is way 1. This is way 1. So the least recently used block in that first set is that one with 6.0 and 6.1. So what am I going to do in this case? Well, I want to replace that block. And with write back, the first step before I replace something is I check if it's dirty. Because if it's dirty, that means it has updates that haven't gone to memory, or the next haven't gone to the next level yet. So I need to update the next level as my first step. So I need to write back the block I'm replacing to make it not be dirty anymore, to clean it up by sending it to the next level. Then, because I have a write allocate as part of my write allocate, I need to handle this write. And here, the processor only wrote to half the block, so I need to bring in the other half. So I'm going to read in the rest of the block to get memory at address 5, and I'm going to combine that with the value the processor wrote to have my new cache value. And because this is a write-back cache, I'm not sending that write immediately to the next level. So I'm going to mark this block as dirty to indicate that at some point I need to remember to write FF back to the rest. I note that I've marked the whole block as dirty, so I'm going to end up writing 2 bytes back, not just 1. Because I have no way of knowing which of those 2 bytes I updated. I'm not recording that information. And I'm also going to update the LRU information to remember that, oh, in the first row, now way 0 is the least recently used because I just used way 1 by writing something to it. Questions on sort of all the things that go on in this write here? So this is if we had write allocate and write back. If we have write no allocate and write back, what would we do in this case? Well, we'd say, it's not in the cache, and done. It's just a write, it's not a read. I'm not going to cache it. I'm just going to send it to the next level and avoid all that extra work. Questions? So let's do a little exercise. So here, I have a write allocate write back cache, and I have my initial state of the cache, and my question is, which of the following things are performed alone? So this isn't like consecutive, this isn't like, you know, cumulative. I'm just asking each of these things separately. Would require reading from the next level, and would require writing to the next level. And I mean any value, and I just mean as part of this access. So if we do something, so with write back, sometimes we'll do something which will require us to write much later. Don't care about writing much later, just mean right now. know, in order for us to like finish the access, this particular access. Who'd like some more time? Let's start with our write of 1 byte to address 3-3. So who thinks that requires reading something from the next level or memory? Okay. Who thinks that does not require reading something from the next level or memory? There's no clue. Okay. So we want to write to address 3-3. So first thing I would do is let's figure out how you look up this value in your cache. So I'm going to split this up into tag index and offset. We have 1 bit of offset. So our offset is this trailing one in the binary representation. Then we have our index, which is 1 bit, which is the 1 second least significant bit, which is 1. So we have to check index 1, this here, and we're going to see if this tag 001100 is in there, and we have a match. It in fact is here. So this is already cached. And we have a write back cache. So what we're going to do is we're going to update our cache, and that's all we're going to do right now. Later on, we might write the change we made back, but not yet. We're not going to do that until we have to get rid of our cache value. And it all happens that, so we're going to update the add value at 0x33, and we're going to mark the block as dirty, but it already is dirty. That's fine. It's just changed more, and we just have to remember, eventually, we're going to write back all the changes all together to memory. We haven't done that yet. We're going to do that at some point in the future when we have to get rid of 0x32 and 0x33 from the cache, memory at 0x32 and 0x33 from the cache. At that point, we're going to actually update the next level. But for now, we just have a changed version in the cache, which hasn't been recorded elsewhere. And that's fine, as long as we don't forget about it. So here, I would say there's no read and no write necessary. Questions, how I figured that out? Okay, so let's look at our next axis. It's just reading from address 5.2. So who thinks that this is going to involve reading a value from memory? Okay. Thinks it's not going to involve reading a value from memory. Okay. Who has no clue? Okay. So we have some split there. So let's. So who thinks 0x52 is already in the cache? Thinks it's not in the cache. Okay, so it's not in the cache. We're reading it. Have to read it from the next level. There's no other way to get it. So we know there's a read, at least for that reason. So we do need a read just to get this value to return to the processor. We're also, it happens, going to read the rest of the block in to cache the whole block. So let's think of how this is going to work. So we're accessing index 1. So we're going to put it somewhere in here. Okay, so next part. How about writing a value to memory? Who thinks we need to write a value to memory for this? Thinks we don't. Who has no clue? Okay, sounds good. So for figuring out if we need to write. So obviously, we're not writing the value at 0x52 to memory, because we just read it. We don't need to update memory with it. It hasn't changed. But we might have to do it for a replacement. So this is index 1, and it's not in the cache. So we're going to have to replace something in index 1. And we have a least recently used replacement policy in this case. I can tell because I load LRU up here, also because we have the LRU information being tracked. And way 1 is least recently used. So what we're going to end up doing is we're going to end up replacing this block containing 3.2 and 3.3. So if we our prior write to 3.3, if we had one, this is the point where we'd actually write it back. And we have to write it back because it's marked as dirty. So dirty means that the value that's there is one that was written earlier and hasn't been sent back to memory yet. So we're going to have a read and a write. So the write is going to be for the thing we're replacing because it was an earlier write that we decided not to write right away. We're delaying the write. We can only delay it so long. And, you know, since we weren't keeping track of the value anymore, we have to write it to the next level so we don't forget about it. Questions? Yes.
So if that value wasn't marked as dirty,
would I still need to write? Question, if that value wasn't marked as dirty, would I still need to write? No, I would not. Because it not being marked as dirty would tell me that the value for the next level is the same. Yes? Question, does writing to OS3 in the last step not just change the LRU? It does, but I tried to ask us to do these independently just because I don't want like the cascading errors problem of everyone having different answers because they did the first step wrong. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay. So let's talk about reading one byte from address 50. Who thinks this would require a read from the next level of memory? Thinks it would not require a read from the next level of memory? Okay. So let's talk about the read here. So if I look at 50, it's index 0. So it's in this first row, and it has tag 01010, which I don't see in this row. It's not in our cache. So I have to read it in just to get the value at 0x50. So I do need a read because it's not in our cache. How about write? Who thinks this requires writing a value to memory? Thinks it does not require writing a value to memory. There's no clue whether it requires writing a value to memory. Okay. So let's figure out what's being replaced. So the least recently used part of index 0 is way 0. So the block we're replacing here is this one. We're replacing 30 and 31. That is not marked as dirty, so we don't need to update memory. That the values we have there came from memory and haven't been changed since. So there's no point in updating the next level. The next level has the same values. We know that because they've never been changed since we got them from the next level. So read, but no write. Because the values there we're replacing are already up to date in the next level. So I have the worked out version. Some questions? Yes?
Like, in what case would we, like this case 3, where we're looking at a value and it's not dirty, like, how would that happen?
How would there be a value in the cache that we're replacing that's not dirty? So for example, after we bring in this value 0x50 and 51, it's not dirty because we only write it. So that'd be the most common way that would happen. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's do the same exercise but with a write no allocate right through cache. So we've got opposite policies for both choices. Who'd like some more time? Okay, a bunch of people. Let's start with our writing one byte to address OS3. Who thinks this is going to need us to read a value from memory or the next level? Thinks it's not going to need us to read a value from memory or the next level. There's no clue. Okay, so most of us say we have no read. I would agree with that. So in this case, we already have the relevant things in our cache. And it's write, no allocate. So if we're doing a write, we wouldn't put them in the cache. They weren't already there. And we need to update that. So how about we just need to update that to handle the access? We don't need to read anything in. We don't need to do any replacements. So there's no reason to read. How about writing? Who thinks we need to write a value to memory or the next level? Thinks we don't need to write a value to memory or the next level? That's no clue. Okay, so we said we have a write through policy. So we have the value in our cache, so we're going to update that value there, but we're also going to update the next level immediately. And a reason we have to do this is that we don't have anywhere we're recording whether the values we have in our cache are dirty. So we don't know when we're replacing if they would be out of date. So what we're doing instead is we're just updating them right away. So write through says we update right away the next level, so we never have to worry about having values in our cache which aren't the same as the next level. So we are going to write, maybe it's clearer, so no read, but yes for the write, even though we're also updating this cache. Because our write through policy says I don't have a way of tracking if I have my values or more up to date. How about for the read from address 5.2? Who thinks that this would require reading a value from memory or the next level? Thinks it would not. Okay, so we have consensus this requires reading because it's not in our cache. Okay, who thinks this would require writing a value to memory or the next level? So it would not require writing a value to memory or the next level. So in this case, I would say it does not. So you might say, wait a moment, to access 5.2, we're going to be replacing something here. In fact, we're going to be replacing this thing that probably was written. And that's fine, because we know that the updates to that were done earlier. The updates for 3.2 and 3.3 were already written to their cache if there were updates. So not the cache, to the next level if there were updates. So we don't need to do any extra work, even though we're replacing that. So we are getting rid of something from the cache, but we don't have to worry about being dirty and needing to be written back because of our write through policy. So there's no reason for a write to the next level. How about our last example? Who thinks we need to read something from the next level? Thinks we don't need to read something? Who has no clue? More people who aren't answering. Okay. Who thinks we need to write something to the next level? Thinks we don't need to write something to the next level? So we have pretty good consensus. This is exactly the same as the other situation. So we need to read something because we don't already have this in our cache. We don't need to write something, even though we're replacing something that replacing, we're just going to forget about it. The next level's already up to date. We don't need to do anything to update it further. Okay, so one thing with writes is that it might seem like this write-through policy is very inefficient because we're writing all the time. And it might seem that write back makes reads very inefficient because you have to wait for the writes to happen. So in practice, the way caches work is generally we're not going to have to wait for writes most of the time. And the way this is done is that caches will kind of do the writes in the background. They'll have what we'll call a write buffer. So they'll have a bunch of pending writes. And rather than waiting for the write to the next level to complete, they'll just put it in this buffer and have it complete as soon as it can. And as long as that buffer doesn't get full, that means completing a write is basically instantaneous. Now, to make this work correctly, when we are reading from the cache, we need to check the write buffer to make sure that if we're reading a value that is in the process of being written, that we get the up-to-date value that should be written soon rather than the old value. But this is something that most caches implement, and this is why the write-through policy isn't like hideously inefficient. Because, you know, even though, yes, we're writing to the next level right away, we don't actually wait for that write to complete most of the time, as long as our write buffer doesn't run out of space. So questions about write buffers? Okay. So we've talked about a bunch of cache design decisions. And we want to talk about like choosing what cache to make. And typically we want to just talk about performance. And so to talk about cache performance, we want to talk about how fast does it appear to programs to access memory. And a typical quantity we'll compute from this is something called average memory access time. So this is basically, if we think of every time you do a load or a store, like what's the average time that takes? And we can compute this as the time for a cache hit plus the extra time for a miss. So penalty is extra time for miss times the miss rate of our cache. Or alternately, this is equivalent to the time for a hit times the hit rate plus the time for a miss, which is going to be the same thing as the time for a hit plus the extra time for a miss. So the hit time plus the miss penalty is the same as the miss time. So miss penalty just means extra time for a miss over the hit time. So this is the quantity we'll commonly compute, and when we're thinking about making changes to our cache, often we'll ask the question of like, how are we affecting these numbers in this formula? So as an example, let's do a little computation. So let's say I have a 90% cache hit rate, my hit time is 2 cycles, and I have a 30 cycle miss penalty. So on a miss, I have to take the 2 cycles plus an additional 30 cycles, 30 cycles in addition to handle that memory access. The miss penalty is presumably the time to go to the next level of cache we're making. So how do I compute our average memory access time here? What should I have? Anyone? Own gears? Yeah.
So you first compute the hit time, which is hit time, 2 cycles times time, cache compute.
Okay, so we have hit time.
And so,
times hit rate, and our hit rate is 90%, okay. Okay, so the miss time is the miss penalty plus the hit time, and what's our miss rate?
10%.
Yes, our miss rate is 10% because things are either hits or misses. We don't have like an in-between. So that'd be one way of computing it. And this would get me 5 cycles. So then we ask the question, let's say if I can increase the cache size, and that would increase my hit time to 3 cycles, but it would improve the miss rate, and therefore increase the hit rate. How much would it need to increase the hit rate for that to be worthwhile? So a way I can compute this is I can say, okay, so another way we can write this formula is that this is the same as 2 plus 30 times 10% is the same thing with the other version. That will be easier for this computation here. And we're going to say, with the new cache, our hit time is 3 cycles, and we want it to be, we're going to have some miss rate times our still 30 cycle penalty, and the break-even point is when that still gives us a 5 cycle average time. So my question is, if I have that 3 cycle hit time, what miss rate with the 30 cycle penalty is going to give you the same average? So I solve for this question mark percent, and I get that I need a 2 to the 30 miss rate or a 28 over 30 hit rate to have it be break even. And this is gives a, and if I calculate what that is in a percentage, this is to about 93%. So questions on sort of the algebra needed for that. So we're going to talk more about applying this average memory access time idea and also look at, well, we have all these cache design decisions. How do they affect different parts of this formula? And so like if we know what changes would we make, you know, what would changes, effects would changes like, you know, changing the number of sets have, for example. Okay, that's all I have for today.